그리고 I am very grateful to all of you for being with us for the 100th Prerna Festival. They gave me the title to speak on Small Things Can Make a Big Difference. So this small little thing will try to make some difference tonight. Actually, this temple we're living, or that we're gathered together in, began as a very tiny half of room, which was rat infested and dilapidated. And a few of us were living down there. And the rest of the building had about 3,000 high school students, coaching class students, a stocking manufacturing company, and a medical clinic. So it started very small. The rats were very big, I have to say. But everything else was very small. And because there was, by the grace of our Gurudev's example, Srila Prabhupada, there was a vision of what could be possible. And when there is a vision of what could be possible beyond ourselves, by God's grace, then incredible things can unfold. It is a universal truth that small things can make very big differences, either positive or negative. Just describing the principle from a negative perspective, malaria is just a tiny little mosquito. Yes? Some of you men, young college boys, you may be proud of your strength. But compare a mosquito's arm to yours. You may be going to a very high, prestigious university. Compare a mosquito's brain to yours. You may be proud of how much you can eat. Compare a mosquito's digestive capacity to yours. It's inconceivably tiny. But yet, one little mosquito, just when you don't even know it, you may be sleeping. You may be dreaming of how next week you're going to take a vacation and climb to Mansrovar. And while you're making that dream, the little mosquito you don't hear him or her. And you can't even see with your eyes that little germ, that little whatever it is that goes into your bloodstream. So it begins very, very tiny. But then in a week or so, when you're ready to pack up, you know, to go on your trip to Mansrovar, you're in critical condition, being shipped off to a hospital with malaria. A little thing, a very small thing, made a big difference in your life. And one little spark, a little spark this big, When you light a match, it begins with a tiny, tiny little spark. And if that match is left in the wrong place, that little spark can create a forest fire that burns thousands and thousands of miles of trees and homes and buildings. I'm from Chicago, and we had a famous fire called the Chicago Fire. And according to legend, some old lady named Mrs. O'Leary, she was milking her cow. And not far away, they were slaughtering cows. So I guess cows have their revenge. There was a little flame this big in a lantern, like a candle, and the cow kicked it, and it hit the hay. The entire city of Chicago burned to the ground. Nothing could stop it. Small things make a big difference. And too many times I see, even among people I know, they're driving a car, and just a moment in inattention, and there could be a crash. Many people could be dead. All their dreams and expectations finished. It really is the nature of the world that small things are so important to be attentive to. According to the Vedic literatures, the living force that animates every human being, every animal, all species of life is the Atma. And within this material creation, this living force, and we see what souls are accomplishing on so many levels in this world, the Atma is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. That's a small thing. But that's who you are. That's who the presidents, the great dictators, the great liberators, the great scientists, the geniuses. That consciousness is manifesting from an Atma, 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, impossible to perceive by material senses, even with the most sophisticated technical machines. That's the living force, the Atma, and the body. Whoever we may be, whether we're world champion wrestlers or cricket players, the physical body begins with a tiny little seed. We don't even know it's there. So insignificant. When the mother and father come together, they're not like organizing, you know, this to get that little seed in here. They don't know what's happening. Just this little tiny seed that can't even perceive with your eyes enters into the mother's ovum. And gradually it emulsifies, it begins to develop. And a few years later, that little seed becomes, what's his name? Sachin Tendulkar? Or Chhatrapati Shivaji? Or whoever you may consider great. Small things. Recently I was in the Redwood Forest in California. And I saw this tree, the second largest tree on planet Earth. It's huge. It has statistics. 20 grown adults, if they hold hands and stretch their arms out as far as they could go, that's how much people it would take to circle, make a circle around that the trunk of the tree. 180 75,000 basketballs you could fit in it if you hollowed it out. Or enough petrol. If you hollowed it out, you could put enough gasoline or petrol to drive around the world 2.5 times. One tree. That's a big tree. And I looked on the ground, and I saw a little cone, and I saw the size of a seed. It was about this big. And that tree came out of that little seed. If we just allow that seed to be in a favorable condition, we could bring out its potential. And this is very much an important part of being successful in anything we do in life. To understand even the smallest thing, what is the potential? Some of the most gigantic corporations in the entire planet Earth began as a small little family store with the husband and wife working, and that's it. And now there's hundreds and thousands of people. Because there was a vision. There was a determination. There was a faith in what is possible. And that faith in what is possible can rescue us from complacency and from ever being discouraged by any setbacks. Because setbacks are crucial for growth to be strong. That is a historical fact. And especially in matters of love. Love is very much expressed through details. A mother's love is in little details. I remember my mother, she was very loving. I used to tell her, why are you wasting your time with all these little things? And when I grew up, those little things that I thought she was wasting her time with is what transformed my life more than anything up until that time. A smile, a kind word can make such a big difference in a person's life. My beloved Guru Srila Prabhupada, I have God brothers and God sisters, and they tell me, I remember one lady, she was telling me, in 1972, how many years ago was that? 40 years ago. 40 years ago, she was in the back of a temple, and Srila Prabhupada happened to walk by, and he smiled at her and asked her if she was happy. That was the only interaction she ever personally had with him in her life. And she said, that moment, it only lasted about 5 seconds. That smile, that compassionate glance, and that simple question of concern is what has nourished her and given her strength to overcome every kind of difficulty and remain positive, remain hopeful, and remain happy. More than anything else in life, it has sustained her. A small act of love. He could have just walked by. Recently, I was in Beverly Hills. It was last May at this conference. It was the Milken Global Conference, where about 4,000 to 5,000 of the leaders of politics, business, science, entertainment in the world come together every year. Cost $5,000 a ticket. But I was invited to speak, so I got in for free. But I went to one seminar on leadership. And they had some of the very most powerful leaders of sports, of business, of science, of financing on a panel. So I was curious, what are they going to say about leadership? And many things I could talk about, which were quite very, very interesting. They moved my heart. And to move a Swami's heart in a business conference, it's not an easy thing. But Mr. Milken, he is an incredible genius with statistics. He had this incredible statistic, which was talking about good leadership. Now, I'm not a genius with anything, especially statistics. So I don't remember the numbers, but I can get them for you. But he had a graph that he put on this big computerized screen in the Beverly Hilton Hotel. And he explained the graph. It was about how to enthuse maximum creative efficiency in an employee. Would you like to hear this? I'm really happy you said that. He explained, if you don't pay a person enough for their basic comforts and needs, they're always in anxiety. This is from a business perspective. I'm not talking to the brahmacharis on this one. But still, the conclusion of this story is as much important to the brahmacharis as everybody else. Then they're always going to be insecure. They're going to be thinking about alternative jobs. They're going to be unstable. So somehow or other, when you get to them, when you give them enough, so they're actually stable, so they actually have confidence in their future, then you get this level of creative efficiency. And then the graph showed, and this was something that was surveyed over years and years by topmost universities. No matter how much more you give a person, the creative efficiency does not go any higher. If that comfort zone is $100,000, if you give the person $500,000, $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, you don't get any more creativity. You don't get any more productivity. It's just like this. However, if you give a person a sense of appreciation, if you give a person a sense that he or she is really valued for what they're doing, if you actually give the person a feeling of love, then their creative productivity soars way beyond it. In other words, little things of kindness and giving a person encouragement to the heart, even in the financial world, what to speak of anywhere else, is a greater initiative, incentive, and inspiration than any amount of money or power or prestige. It seems like a small thing to say thank you to a person, to say this is very wonderful what you're doing. We really appreciate it. But it makes a big difference. And I think in all of our dealings in life, this is very important. I've never been married. as a Swami, I'll never get married. So I don't know that much about married life. But because so many married people come to me with their problems, I know too much about married life. Whenever people come to me, it's like they have such a unique secret problem that's so much their own. But interestingly, almost everyone tells me the same thing. And it's almost all about little things, small things. They could make such a positive big difference or such a negative big difference. You know, so many times the wife says, my husband, he doesn't care about me. He doesn't love me. He doesn't appreciate anything I do. And she's crying and crying. And I asked the husband, you know, do you care about your wife? He says, of course. I give her so much money. I give her clothes. I give her a house. I give her, you know, whatever she wants. I said, well, do you ever tell her you appreciate? He said, she should already know these things. This is a standard answer. Well, what if she, you know, there's a, you know, she doesn't understand. Well, she should understand. I give her everything else. Actually, I do tell her. When was the last time you told her? I don't remember. I've seen small things like a thank you save a marriage from total collapse. If it's a little consistent. It's a small thing, but it makes a bigger difference than all the big things you're working for. In most occasions. On the spiritual platform, it is these small things that really are the way we express our love for God. We may do big things. We may do great things. But love is so much about what we put in the details. There's that beautiful story of Krishna. He was living in Dwarka. And I believe Narada Muni wanted to take him away for somewhere, to go somewhere. And all the queens of Dwarka were begging, no, no, don't take him away, don't take him away. And Krishna said, you know, it was agreed, Satyabhama and others would bring their jewels, diamonds, emeralds, rubies, gold, silver, to put on one side of a scale, and Krishna would sit on the other. And whatever weighed as much as Krishna, they would take instead of Krishna. And they put mountains of the most precious. This would be billions of rupees, trillions of rupees, quadrillions of rupees of emeralds and diamonds, stacked high. And Krishna weighed more. And then Rukmini, who wanted Krishna just to be with her so bad, she said, take away all the jewels. And she took one tulsi leaf, not a tulsi plant in a pot, one single tulsi leaf.
How much does a tulsi leaf weigh?
It's only this big. And with love and devotion, she put that tulsi leaf on the scale, and the scale went, whoosh! And Krishna jumped way up. And he was defeated. And he stayed with Rukmini. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta priyachchati. Krishna tells in Gita that it is only love, it is only affection that attracts him. He says, if one offers to me with love and devotion even a leaf, a flower, a piece of fruit, or a little water, I accept it. And the Srimad Bhagavatam reveals to us that not only does Krishna accept, he's conquered by, he's defeated by the love of the devotee. Even if it's expressed with the smallest gesture. We often talk about Kolavecha Sridhar. He was in poverty. He wore rags. He lived in a single room, tiny straw hut with no furniture. He just had one old, dented, beat-up iron water pot. And he made his living by selling banana leaves. And every now and then he'd have a banana or a banana root or some banana bark, whatever he could get. And the Supreme Lord himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would go to Sridhar to argue over the price of bananas for 3 hours every day. The husband of the goddess of fortune, does he need a banana? But he does. It's the love of his devotee. Every day Lord Chaitanya would eat his meal off a banana leaf that Kolavecha Sridhar gave him. And it made everything so delicious. Just to be connected with that leaf. Which cost nothing. Because if you've ever been to Bengal, there are banana leaves every place you put your eyes. There's no shortage of banana leaves in West Bengal. But that simple leaf, such a small thing, made such a big difference that it literally conquered the heart of the absolute truth, the creator of all existence. Lord Chaitanya explained, what is bhakti? It begins in our heart as the bhakti lata bija, a little seed. We all have that seed. When we come in contact with great personalities, with great gurus, that seed is awakened in our heart. And when we take serious and water that seed, through our spiritual practices, through chanting God's names, through hearing the glories of the Lord, through doing seva for the Lord and the devotees, through showing compassion to other living beings, when we water that little seed, it grows, it sprouts, becomes a plant, it becomes a tree, and it awakens fruits. Fruits of prema bhakti, ecstatic love, that could quench all one's hunger and thirst. The hunger and thirst of the heart with love forever. That small thing, just by a moment's association with the great soul, our whole life could be transformed because that seed begins to grow. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarava sastra koi. Lava matra sadhu sangha, sarava siddhi hoy. This is a really small thing. But this verse says, this is the declaration of all the great scriptures and all the great histories of spirituality, that even a moment's association with a lover of God can open the doors to the supreme perfection of liberation. Lavamatra technically means 1/12 of a second. That's a small thing. It's hard to even calculate 1/12 of a second. I mean, that last sentence, hundreds of 1/12 of seconds have already passed, and we haven't even noticed it. Imperceptible. But even that 1/12 of a second, if our heart is receptive to receive the grace of a great soul, it opens the doors to the supreme perfection of liberation. The gopis, even Shukadev Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, these great acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, internally even Shankaracharya, they honor the gopis as the highest, most fully enlightened transcendentalists. We read about great kings who conquer lands for God. We read about people who build massive temples or holy places for God. This is all wonderful things if it's done with the right motive. We read about great scholars who can enchant, enthrall, and mystify people's minds by incredible scholarship and oratory skills. But the gopis, even greater than the yogis who could perform miracles, who could create planets, who could kill people by saying a mantra, who could read people's minds. The yogic cities are extremely powerful if you know how to use them. But the greatest yogis consider the gopis to be so far more advanced and more enlightened than anyone else. And what do the gopis do? Small things. They conquer Krishna by their laughter, by their smiles. They make malas, garlands. That's what they do. They go out and pick flowers. One little flower at a time and put it on, string it on a garland. They make little flower seats for Krishna. They milk cow. Anybody could milk a cow. Anyone could make a garland. But yet, they're considered the highest. Because those small things they do with love. And that's the beauty of Vrindavan. Every little detail is done with so much love, with so much care. Why? Samsidhyat Haritoshanam. Because there's actually a focus to please Krishna. In human relationships, if we really want to please the object of our love or the object of those who we are responsible for, it's in the big things, but filling the big things with the details. That's where love is. That's where care is. That's where reciprocation is. That's where we can touch people's hearts. And that's where we can touch God's heart. Gauranga Prabhu was talking about Varnashram Dharma in his introduction. There's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam which describes the very essence of Varnashram Dharma. In fact, the very essence of life. Atapumbird vijastreshtas varnashrama vibhagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshanam. the real perfection, the success of our occupation, our duty, our spiritual duties, our worldly duties, whatever they may be, is to the degree they please Lord Hari. If we actually have the consciousness that I'm doing this to please somebody, to please God, to please the devotees, to please another person, we'll put our heart into it. And love is where we put our heart into. And unfortunately, people are so distracted from what really matters. Srila Prabhupada uses that very simplistic example of how the lady, she decorates her bird's cage with so much elegance. But her friend comes and looks inside and sees that the bird is starved to death. Because she forgot the simple, she's taking jewels and emeralds and all sorts of beautiful silks to decorate the cage. But she forgets to give even a little rice or a little water to the bird. That's the story of the world we live in today. In trying to accomplish things, we so much miss the very purpose of it all. Distracted by Maya, by illusion. Those small things. What will please God? What will actually be in harmony with my very soul, my Atma? What will actually give quality, fulfillment, and happiness to another human being? We are so distracted with so many things. It is said that a cultured society loves people and uses things. But in today's world, all too often, we use people and love things. But there could be no quality life there. There could be no fulfillment to the heart. Small things can make such big differences. Here in India, Mahatma Gandhi was a very small man. But he had a vision. He had a vision of what small things could do. He had a march for salt, right? To get some salt from the sea. I mean, that doesn't sound like such a big thing, does it? He just sat in his little garden with a spinning wheel and made his own clothes. That seems like a small thing, doesn't it? Special effects. But that small little man just sitting at a spinning wheel and getting people to walk for some, to make some salt, conquered the British Empire, the most powerful empire in the world. In those days, the sun never set in the British Empire. Today, the weather in Britain is such, you hardly ever see it rise. But it was small things that made such a big difference. Chhatrapati Shivaji, he was a real small guy. From what I've heard in histories, he was very small in size. But he was fearless. Because although he was against all odds, he understood the opportunity, the hope. He had a vision of what the potential could be, even for a small man. And in my own life, the most greatest inspiration is His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Such a small thing He did. And actually, it's the cause of not only this program today, but tens and thousands of such programs every day all over the world. He was a very small man. I'm small. And he was really small in size. And I remember sometimes people, they'd hear his lectures, they'd read his books, they'd hear about him, and they would expect this gigantic, heroic avatar to appear. And then they see this little Prabhupada walking with a cane. And you know what would happen? Their hearts would melt. Not with awe and reverence, but with gratitude and love. When he got on the Jaladuta in Calcutta, on August, Friday the 13th, very auspicious day, Friday the 13th of August, 1965, he boarded that boat. He had 40 rupees, $7, but never could change it. He was already very sick, ill health. He went alone on a cargo ship, 38 days. While crossing the Arabian Sea, he had two heart attacks, severe seasickness, no medical help. He crossed Asia, the Middle East, Europe, went through parts, the northern part of Africa. Ultimately sailed all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. And here this little man, he just had a little box of cereal, bag of cereals. He had a box of books. And he had a little cooker to cook. One pot that had four divisions, I believe. That's all he had. But he had such a vision of what could happen, the potential of God's grace. He began so small. He was staying at the YMCA Hotel in Butler, Pennsylvania. Somebody was sponsoring a little tiny room, and he had to walk about 8 blocks to someone's house to cook. And the police, the place he was cooking, Sally and Gopal Agrawal's house, they were not vegetarian. The first day he came in, they were all eating meat. So you know what Prabhupada did? He made such a wonderful vegetarian feast for everyone and served it to everyone that he never even said anything against their meat eating. They just loved his cooking so much. As long as he was there, they didn't eat anything except what he cooked. They were pure vegetarians for that time, without even being preached to, just being given something. He just cooked with so much love. It wasn't just the taste of the food, it was the love in which it was given. He conquered them. Little things. But he wanted to start a worldwide movement. Butler, Pennsylvania is just not the place to do that. It's a tiny town. He went to New York City. And from New York City, he would just, with his little cane, he would just walk down the streets. And there would be limousines and Empire State Buildings and all these gigantic, you know, Fifth Avenue and Central Park. And then there was the ghettos of the Bowery, and there was the violence and various other areas. New York is immense. The crime, the money, the sensual enjoyments, the sins, the everything. Massive cathedrals.
thousands of brothels.
And there's little Prabhupada.
He has no money. He doesn't know a single person. He's just walking down the street with a cane. And he's just sitting in a park and singing. Or he's meeting someone.
If you read his diary, it's incredible. If you read his diary from a heartfelt perspective, he left Vrindavan. He's a saint. He was living now in Manhattan. And he writes how he was invited to someone's apartment. And he had a little kirtan. And there was like four people that came. And he said, they liked it. He said, he was so enthusiastic, he liked it. Now I know for sure the prediction of Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya that this name will be chanted all over the world will be fulfilled. Now if any of us were to have a program like that with those four people and they just liked it, we would probably be really depressed. Then what am I wasting my time for? But Srila Prabhupada, even his god brothers and god sisters and well wishers in India were writing back to him, it's hopeless, it's impossible, just come back. But where there were no results to the parent eyes, he saw a potential. He saw an opportunity. He had a vision. And he had such faith in that vision. And that's what it takes for small things to make a big difference. Radhe Shyam Prabhu is a very small-sized person. And, you know, when he came out of college, he didn't know what was going on, actually. But look at what he's done because of a vision. Because he just sees the possibility. Gauranga Prabhu, at one time, he was a little seed in the womb of this beautiful mother of Sachi Devi. Yes, and somehow or other, she gave him milk and she taught him how to walk, and she taught him how to talk, along with his wonderful father, the late Jagannath Dev. You know, could you imagine Gauranga not knowing how to talk? Here's the lady that taught him how to speak, his first words. I don't know what they were, mama or something like that. Every devotee comes and says, my son, the first word he said was Prabhupada. And they're so proud. And they say, listen, listen, listen. And the child goes, yeah. Didn't you hear that? Yeah, Premanjana Churitabhati. Unless our ears are anointed with the wax of love. We can't hear what the child's saying. But small things can make big difference. So on today, this very, very special event of the 100th Prerna started with just a few people coming. And it has reached so many because some of these devotees, you know, they've persevered with hope. They have faith in the grace of God. If we live in this spirit of devotion, we can attract the grace of God. That was Srila Prabhupada's lesson. There's that famous story where he was sitting on a park bench in Central Park before he even met Mukunda Maharaj or got the little storefront of 26 Second Avenue. He was just sitting on a park bench and he just met somebody there. And the person saw, this is an interesting, you know, you never saw swamis in New York in those days. And he asked him, you know, what are you doing? And Srila Prabhupada, with such enthusiasm, was telling him, I have centers all over the world. And thousands of devotees and millions of books. And he didn't even have any assurance of his next meal or even a place to stay. He wasn't speaking for some marketing purpose. He was speaking for his heart. He saw the potential of God's grace. He saw the seed of what's possible, even in the smallest thing. And actually, everything great in this world begins with a seed, an idea, a purpose, and especially love. And when Srila Prabhupada did get that little storefront, he only had about 4 or 5 people who were not really following him. They just kind of were interested in him. And Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and said, we will have centers, international society with centers all over the world. Now, on one level, we could think people like Prabhupada, you know, he's such a great Paramahamsa Mahatma. He had that vision. But we'll benefit so much more if we understand what Krishna, what God is teaching us through the great souls. Srila Prabhupada prayed to be a puppet of God's grace. Mukam karoti bachalam pangum langetit karim. When one just focuses on that, and accesses the grace of God, a blind man could see the forest stars in the sky. A lame man can cross the biggest Himalayan mountains. A dumb man can speak eloquent poetry. The power of God's grace. There's no limit. And to access that grace is why we come together, to try to enthuse each other, to inspire each other with goodness, with character, with integrity, to make a real difference in this world. However much corruption, however much disaster there may be, we should enthuse, inspire each other with hope of the potential we have, individually and especially collectively. And to access that grace with a sincere and grateful and humble heart, we can chant the holy names. Much louder, please.
Krishna, 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 Krish
Thank you very much.
Swami Maharaj ki. So we are very happy. That Maharaj has given such an inspirational talk on the occasion of the 100th Prerna. We have a special announcement. That, of course, many preachers and many devotees were involved in making efforts in carrying this legacy of the Prerna festivals. But there is one devotee in particular who has the distinction, the unique distinction of being present for all the 100 Prernas. And not only being just present, but he has been facilitating, bringing so many students, helping in organizing, assisting, very humble, very sincere, very enthusiastic. And for the last 99 prayanas and including this prayana, he has played a key role, not only in just in prayana festivals, but overall he has been like one of the main backbones of the ISKCON youth services and the activities. And I'm sure most of you know who he is. And we would request this devotee to come forward. And he's His Grace Priya Chaitanya Prabhu. So I'd request His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj to felicitate Priya Chaitanya Prabhu with a photograph of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and a Mahaprasad garland. So also we would like to thank His Grace Gaur Gopal Prabhu for training him so wonderfully. And also this concept of the Prerna Festival originated with this trio of Gaur Gopal Prabhu, Baldev Prabhu and Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu. And also the name Prerna was given by them. Haribo. So I think we request you to cut this cake which has been made in the shape of 100. And all of you will get
this is the perfection of knife.
So thank you very much. Please have your seat. This cake, remnants of this cake, you'll get probably 1/100th of a piece. That will be during the prasadam. So first, regarding prasadam, in case people start moving, we request you to go out from this door only and via the Gaur Nithai hall corridor, and from that staircase only for the prasadam line, which we usually use for Sundays and festivals. Please do not go from the main staircase for prasadam. You please go from this side. We would like to welcome a host of luminaries, special guests and VIPs this evening. And we are very grateful that you joined us this evening, hands. And we'll pass on the mic and you can ask questions to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj on this topic. So anyone with any questions, please. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, my question is not related with this topic, but you mentioned in one lecture that without loving all the living beings, we cannot love Krishna. So I just wanted to know in what is the best possible way in which I can love and serve all the living beings?
By loving Krishna. When you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished by that water. So when we learn how to love God, naturally our love extends to every part of God, which is every living being. The example is also given that if you want to feed the various limbs and organs of the body, we must give food to the stomach. When we give the proper food to the stomach, it is naturally distributed to the hands, the eyes, the brain, the feet, every tissue of the body. When we learn how to love Radha Gopinath, naturally our love will extend to all living beings, without discrimination, beyond sex, sect, caste, religion, nationality, or even species. Pandita Samadarshana. The statement was that when we love God, you cannot love God and not love all living beings. That is the testimony of the authenticity of our love, is how it extends to everyone. Because we see a part of God in every heart, beyond the superficial differences we have. But also in order to achieve that love of God, while chanting God's name and trying to awaken that seed of devotion within our heart through the practice of bhakti, it is an elementary practice of bhakti, amani na manadena, to honor and respect and feel oneself the servant of all beings. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, as you mentioned in the lecture that everything begins with the seed and then finally it makes a big difference. But sometimes all seeds does not make the big difference. So Maharaj, can you tell us that what is the precautions and what we should take care that the seed, our seed of devotion also grows into a big tree and ripens a fruit. And so,
Lord Chaitanya did explain this to Rupa Goswami, that Bhakti Lata Bija, it's very much allegorically like the seed of a tree. At the beginning stages, when it first begins to sprout, it's very fragile, and it must be carefully protected and nourished. especially protected from being strangled by weeds. The weeds in this case of this allegory are the weeds of anarthas, the weeds of egoism, envy, arrogance, selfish lust, anger, greed, illusion, the tendency to criticize and find faults with others, hate. These are all weeds. But weeds, unless we're very careful, the weed could look just like the little sprout of devotion, of love within our heart. And most people are watering the weeds. And the weeds are getting bigger and stronger and bigger and stronger. And they strangle the frail little sprout of devotion. So we must be careful, as far as possible, to uproot those weeds, to not serve those weeds of the greed weed and other such weeds. That's what tapasya is. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. To not put the water of our attention and our service onto the weeds of distraction. To recognize them for what they are. And through our spiritual practice of hearing and chanting and satsang and puja and archana, this is, if it's done with the proper spirit, the right motivation, it very rapidly nourishes the seed of devotion. And criticizing others, offending others, is compared, especially great souls, is compared to a mad elephant coming to trample the seed. So there's a science we must understand carefully. How to nourish and protect that seed. And once it becomes very, very nourished and strong, then nothing can harm it. But especially in its beginning stages, just like a mother for a child. When a child grows up to be very strong and self-sufficient, it doesn't need the constant care of the mother. But a little baby needs constant care. So when this little seed is like a little baby just growing, we have to nourish with the care of a mother and be very careful. Does that answer your question?
Sometimes we have a vision, but due to some reasons, we fear to follow it because of lack of confidence and because of the results. So what to do in those situations?
To associate with people who have confidence and to become inspired and enthused. We were speaking about Srila Prabhupada. He considered he had such a burning compassion for other beings that he was willing to go in the most impossible, incredible places and remain like a lotus flower in muddy water and remain pure and create other lotus flowers. And by associating with him, by hearing what he was doing and seeing, simple people who just grew up with no conception of dharma, no conception of bhakti, never heard of Krishna. They were taking drugs, they were having boyfriends and girlfriends and all, you know, the American way. Just a couple 1 year in bhakti, associating with Prabhupada, and they were going to countries without any money, without knowing anyone, and reaching hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people and giving them bhakti, giving them Krishna. Where did they get that confidence from? The greatest confidence is to understand, according to the Gita, that I'm not the doer. Ahankara vimudatma. Just to be an instrument of God's grace. Then we can have incredible confidence, incredible enthusiasm, incredible fearlessness, and most important, incredible character and integrity and dignity. Because we feel a responsibility to be an instrument of a grace, a power, so much more than ourselves. Yes? I'm a very small person. I went to one semester of a junior college, and I didn't do well either. And that's the extent of my education. And here we have all these people with PhDs and master's degrees at IIT asking me questions. Do I have confidence to answer your question? No. But if I'm just surrendered to be an instrument of God's grace, my guru's grace, as your servant, then there can be unlimited confidence beyond our own abilities. And that's within all of us. And that comes when we associate with people who access that grace. Does that answer your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yes.
Maharaj, often there is a conflict between mind and brain. So in this case...
Mind and...
Brain. I'm sorry, mind and heart, I'm going to say.
Mind
brain
and
heart.
Like. Brain and heart.
Yeah.
It's becoming very biological. Yes, go on.
So in such situation, what we should follow, like, say... There's a conflict between brain and heart. Say, you fear something, but it may happen. There may be a possibility of unknown things happening. In such situation, what you should follow? You should follow your brain or your heart?
We should harmonize both our brain and our heart with the Word of God. With the will of God. Yes?
Get that signal from the God.
Huh?
How do we get that signal from the God?
How do we
get that signal? Message. How do we enter the message from the God?
The same way you access a television station. You have to tune into the correct frequency. And that comes by associating with people who are tuned in. And in their association, really learning how to hear from, you know, the holy scriptures and from the holy acharyas, the proper understanding. And that's what this chanting of God's name is, the Yuga Dharma. If we do it with the right association and with the right character, this chanting of God's names, it tunes us into the frequency of this of God's grace, God's infinite grace. That is why we raise our arms and loudly chant the holy name. When we chant as a group together in this way, we're not only accessing the grace, but we're spreading that vibration throughout the universe. Thank you. So harmonize the heart. The heart is the seat of feeling. The brain is the seat of discrimination. Srila Prabhupada would say, religion or feeling, devotion, without philosophy, often is degraded to sentimentalism or even fanaticism. And instead of feeling love, we feel hate and envy. That's what fanaticism is about. That's religion without philosophy. And philosophy, the brain without religion, the heart, often breeds just cold mental speculation. No transformation of character. No love. Just intellect, discrimination. We must harmonize the two. Under proper direction, under proper inspiration, and then we actually taste the fruit of true love. And we can be an instrument of that. Does that answer your question? Thank you. One more question? If someone could send microphone to...
Hare Krishna Maharaj, sometimes we are so much engaged in our studies and other duties that we want to act in such a way that we'll represent our spiritual master to them in a proper way so that they'll also get benefited by Krishna consciousness. But we sometimes simply don't get time, and even the people whom we want to tell do not have time. And if we get a small amount of time, then we are sometimes shy enough to do that. So what should we really do in such
make time. A sign of sincerity and intelligent is to establish priorities in our life. If we actually want to fulfill a high purpose, we should know that there will be so many alternatives, so many distractions. We have to balance our life with set priorities. Just like, are you a student or do you work?
Maharaj, I'm a student.
What do you study?
Management.
What type of management?
Human resource management.
Human resource. Please accept my obeisance. There's a lot of service for you in this world. Which institution do you study?
Indian Institute of Management, Indore.
IIM. It's very nice. So certainly, if the more hours you put in your studies, probably the better you will do in your exams. What if you decide, well, why should I eat? I'll just study. Why should I sleep? How many hours a night do you sleep? 5 hours. You could study 5 more hours. Why are you wasting your time? Because there's certain priorities that are just necessary for your health. Yes? And there's certain priorities necessary for your studies. And there's also certain priorities necessary for your spiritual stability and your spiritual growth. And we must give priority to all of these things. But of everything, one's spirituality is the highest priority because it's the foundation in which we build every other aspect of our life. And if our foundation is not strong, nothing will have integrity. So it's just a matter of accepting within our own mind, as he was saying, our heart and our brain, our intellect and our feelings, to understand this is important. This is as important to my soul as eating and sleeping is to my body. I have to give the time and nourishment. And once you make that priority, then you will do it. It's just a matter of establishing that priority and putting into practice. And then we will see if we actually have a very strong spiritual fulfillment within our life, and we have that deep meaning to our life, then it adds so much quality to everything else we do. There are so many students, Radhe Shyam Prabhu, Gaur Gopal Prabhu, Braj Bihari Prabhu, Gauranga Prabhu, they could give so many examples of students who really put tremendous priority in their spiritual integrity and their spiritual development and give time for that. And because of the quality of consciousness they gain, they excel tremendously in their studies and in the workplace as well. Now, if you start doing nice sadhana and you think, well, I don't really care about my studies anymore, then you're again off balance. Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna took those hours aside to sit and listen to Krishna. Yes? And then with the spiritual fuel he gained from taking that time with Krishna, hearing the Bhagavad Gita, then he went into the workplace and did his job with full force. But he had the quality of that wisdom and the fulfillment of that devotion in what he was doing. So give some time to connect with Krishna and then go into the battlefield of IIM and be to serve with excellence. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
You're welcome. Shall we have kirtan at this time? Thank you very, very much.
Hare Krishna. So let us offer our deepest gratitude to His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. He has been having a very, very busy schedule. He just came back after a program from Pune, Nigdi, traveling back today just to be with us here for this evening. Let us express our deepest heartfelt gratitude by very loudly chanting, Riva! Riva! Riva!
Maharaj is on his way to Moscow, UK and the United States of America. Tomorrow night he is leaving and we'll be missing him very much from the Prerna festivals till he comes back in the month of September. And we are requesting him to come back soon in September so that he can be with us, all of us, here for the Prerna festival. Thank you, Maharaj, for being with us here. Hare Krishna. So we'll have kirtan at this point of time. Hare Krishna.